Hey everybody and welcome, Art Subcheck here. In today's webinar, we're going to focus entirely on objections and resistance in the sales process and how you can address them successfully without using those goofy sounding rebuttals or just sounding like a downright jerk. All right. A couple of quick answers to questions here. Yeah, you're going to get a recording of this program, which you're going to want to go through a few times because I'm going to speak quickly and cover lots of word for word techniques. And yeah, you're going to get a written transcript, or actually the electronic PDF of it, actually, so you can see the mini examples and just copy them and adapt them. Now, regarding questions, I did get a bunch by email and I'm covering the answers all throughout the program. And because I kept adding material as I went through this, and I want to respect your time, if your question is not answered, please email it to me afterwards and I will answer it personally. Send that to smartcalling@gmail.com. And that goes for those of you who have obtained the recording afterwards, okay? And what I'll also do is likely share those answers and questions in our Smart Calling Facebook community so everyone can get the benefit from it. And if you're not yet in that community, just go to Facebook and do a search on the Smart Calling group. Okay, so there's been a lot of nonsense taught over the years and still is being taught about sales, and much of it has to do with objections and how to deal with them. So here's some of the garbage that you might have heard or seen. Selling doesn't start until objection has been voiced. You should love objections. After the third objection is when you'll usually get the sale. And whenever I hear stuff like that, I just got to shake my head. What's scary is that there are people who actually believe some of this nonsense. If the selling didn't start until you heard an objection, what were you doing up until that point? Hey, why not just start out the call with, hey, okay, what's your objection? Come on, let me hear it. Let's start with that. Yeah, right? And love objections. If I love something, I want more of it. And as for objections themselves, I prefer I never hear another one, since they're really a sign that something broke down in the process up to that point. I mean, no objections would mean perfection, right? Which we're never going to reach, but we should always try to get closer to it than the alternative. Actually, you want to know the best way, the very best way to deal with objections? Yeah, prevent them. Most objections are created by salespeople who talk too much. Think about it. If you didn't mention something that they didn't want, you wouldn't hear an objection, would you? So the most important point is, focus on asking questions before you present, and you're going to minimize objections. Now, with that said, the reality is, yeah, of course, we're always going to be faced with resistance, and how you deal with it determines your success and the height of your attitude, too, right? And many sales reps either give up when they just first bump into the first sign of resistance, or they get defensive and they tighten up and they react adversarially and yeah, they put on the gloves and they're going to start defending their own position and argue. And neither one of those is a good strategy. Hey, if you give up, you're potentially missing an opportunity that still might be there. But there's a problem that's got to be addressed. And we need to address it professionally and conversationally. The problem with a lot of conventional sales training on objections is that it focuses on responding to an objection with a canned answer. And there are a couple of really serious flaws with that approach. First, when we hear an objection, what are you hearing? You're not hearing the problem. You're hearing a symptom. For any objection, there could be 5 or 10 possible reasons why someone said what they did. If you come back with one canned answer, it's pretty likely that you're not addressing their real concern. Now, the other flaw with using a canned answer is that it's simply telling someone they're wrong. If we have any baseball fans out there, I'm a huge baseball guy. One thing I learned from years of playing baseball myself and then coaching my son's baseball team and girls' softball teams, and what I learned here, it's common sense, but in the heat of the moment, it's not usually practiced by most people or coaches. And it's this: umpires don't like to be told they're wrong. So if you tell an umpire that a pitch was a strike when he or she called it a ball, they don't say, hey, you know what? You're right. Thanks for pointing that out. I'm going to change the call. or worse, if you tell them with passion that they just blew that call at first base, many times they'll tell you to leave the field, right? So, I mean, it makes sense. When was the last time someone thanked you for telling them they were flat out wrong? Anybody married out here? I mean, it just doesn't happen, right? So even though everyone resents being told they're wrong and often getting defensive in the process, most sales training suggests sales reps do exactly that. Counter objections and resistance with these canned phrases, these insidious things like the boomerang technique, which basically, again, tells people they're wrong and makes them feel stupid. I was in line at the local Barnes & Noble, and the counter guy was processing my transaction. And then I heard him, well, he asked me the question that I heard him ask to the three people in front of me. And the question was, do you have one of our discount cards? And I said, oh, no. And this, at the time, was a card that they sold for $25 annually and gave you, I think, 10% off purchases. Now, being the math wizard that I am, I calculated that just the break even on the card was $250 worth of purchases yearly. And maybe I spend that much at Barnes & Noble, but I also buy probably thousands at Amazon and also for my Kindle and whatever airport bookstore I wander into. So I had already made a decision I wasn't going to get the card. And I was in a hurry. Plus, there are lots of people behind me, so I didn't want to hold them up. And then he said to me, so would you like to get one? I said, no, I'll pass, thanks. Then he used it. I call it the goofy objection rebuttal technique. And he said, what, don't you like to save money? Now, my first unspoken reaction was to say, and don't you want me to reach across the counter and smack you in the head? But instead, I just, being the nonviolent person I am, I just smiled and I said, hey, just go ahead and ring up the books. Then as he was bagging up the purchase, he added, you know, it's a good deal if you buy a lot. Well, at least he was persistent. And I told him I was capable of doing the math. So here's the key point. You're never going to change anyone's mind by talking at them. So, for example, think about some beliefs that you feel strongly about. Something political, a lot of that going on right now. Maybe something moral. Maybe your favorite sports team. If someone simply started refuting everything you believed in, you would likely start defending your stance and think why the other person is wrong and probably resenting them as a person in the process. Now, we can, however, help someone to first doubt their beliefs, which is the first hurdle in getting them to open up to your ideas. So we got to get them to question their position regarding your offer or your ideas. People believe their ideas more than they do yours. You can't tell them they're wrong and expect success, but you can help them to doubt their perceptions. Then that causes them to lower their guard a little bit and at least be open to what you have to say. And you do this with doubt-creating questions. Okay, then, what we should do and what we're going to do on this webinar. First, we're going to go through a process for identifying the reasons behind the objections that you hear and then how to create doubt in the mind of that person so that they can perhaps maybe take a look and see your side of the story. Then we're going to look at the other forms of resistance that you might hear. Things like, yeah, let me think about it, or yeah, we really don't need that. And then finally, I'm going to end with a bunch of rapid fire resistance and objection tips that you can use. Okay. So right now we're going to go through a process that I suggest that you follow for all of the common objections you hear. Now, this process will provide you with ways to first understand the reasons behind the objections you hear, and then we're going to work backwards, and you're going to develop questions designed to help them doubt their beliefs. And again, that's the first step in opening them up to possibly considering your ideas. Then, in this process, you're going to anticipate the possible answers you might hear in response to your questions. And then you're going to continue the process. Now, you're not going to be working on all that here today. This requires you sitting down, writing these things out. And when you're doing it, it's going to be like as if you're role-playing the possible scenarios that you might run into so that you're going to be prepared for them. Now, when I do my in-person training sessions for companies, we do this as a workshop activity where I give you a lot of time to write out your responses in each of these areas. And again, it does take time, which we don't have right now. So I'm going to present the process to you. Please do take notes on it. And then I suggest you do it either alone or part of your sales team to collaborate. Now, don't worry if you don't get everything here, since, again, you're going to have the replay of this shortly, as well as the transcript as soon as that's done. All right. So the first step in the process is pretty simple. And that's this: write out a common objection. And I'm talking about something you might hear deep into your sales process. All right, a real objection, like your price is too high, or I can get it cheaper online. Now, number two, you're going to list out possible reasons people might have for that objection. So we got to understand why we hear these objections. Now, as part of this process, I like to think about, why would someone say this? Where are they coming from? I mean, it could be a symptom of their lack of complete and accurate information. Maybe they just don't have enough information about your product or what you're presenting, therefore they object. Maybe they misunderstand what you have. They just don't get it. Maybe it's an emotional stance that could be illogical. For example, let's say you're clearly a better choice, but they say, well, you know what? I want to deal with somebody local. Yeah, I know it costs more, but I just want to deal with somebody local. I want to keep my money here. And that clearly could be illogical, but could be very real for them. And we can deal with that. Maybe it could be your misunderstanding of what they really wanted. I mean, this happens in cases where salespeople didn't ask enough questions. They presented something, it's not on target, they hear an objection. Or maybe it could be a genuine problem they have with buying from you. This could be a case where it's just not a fit. Okay, well, we're probably not going to ever get the sale if it's just not a fit. But most of those other ones, yeah, we've got a shot at dealing with it. I mean, here's one you might get. When they say your price is too high, does that mean that they can get it cheaper from somebody down the street? Or do they have a predetermined price figure in mind? Or do they not have enough money in this thing called a budget? We got to know their rationale, which is their problem, before we can address the symptom, which is the objection that we actually hear. When I sold actual physical audio CDs, I had a guy send me an email and he said, $300 for a set of CDs? That's too much money. I went to a convention and their sales CDs aren't priced that much. So I thought, well, clearly, this guy isn't comparing apples to apples here. So I was kind of in a playful mood, and I called him up. And I said, yeah, I got your email. And yeah, I just want to let you know, if you just want CDs, I can get you some really cheap at Best Buy. And he laughed, and we went on. We talked more about what he really wanted, which was, of course, the content in the CDs, right? So that guy had a predetermined price figure in mind. He thought, well, this is what it should cost. And then what we did was we got him thinking along the lines of, what is the real problem here? The real problem was that he didn't see the value yet in the information that he was looking for. We got him thinking in terms of getting the information, not just physical CDs, all right? So you want to list out all those reasons. All right, third step in the process. Now we're going to develop questions that create doubt. We want them to question their position regarding your offer or ideas and their problem. People believe their ideas more than they do yours. You can't tell them they're wrong. And again, expect them to agree with you, but we can help them to doubt their perceptions. And then when we do that, that causes them to lower their guard a little bit. Things slow down. And now they're going to be a little bit more open to what you have to say. Now, consider this. In order for someone to change their mind, including me, including you, we need to go through this process where we have to look at our belief and say this about it. Well, maybe there's another way to look at it. Then, if we do that, we begin softening our position to a point where we might consider other options. So the way you get them to do that is with these doubt-creating questions. So here's how you do it. For each of the objection reasons you came up with, you're going to sit down, you're going to write out questions that are intended to uncover their why and then plant seeds of doubt. For example, let's take that price is too high. Questions here could be, are we talking about just the price itself or the long-term value? What are we being compared to? Well, what price figure did you feel would be appropriate for what you're looking to receive? Let's take price out of the picture for a minute. Do you like this better than any other that you've seen? And this is one of my all-time favorites. Act a little bit confused and say, oh, could you explain that for me? So let's look at a specific situation. Let's say a wholesale supplier is trying to persuade a retailer to carry his product. The retail customer says, yeah, we don't need to stock any more lines. Of course, the wrong response would be a canned objection rebuttal coming back with market share facts and figures that would prove the retailer wrong, but not change his mind. Now, a doubt-creating approach would be to use questions like, oh, well, let me ask you, how often in the past month have people called and asked for this type of product and you weren't able to provide it? Or what situations have you had where someone called and asked about a product like this, but they didn't come in because they found out you didn't have it? Now, of course, this takes a little bit of thought and effort. And when you execute it, which we're going to put into the process here shortly, it sounds like the first time you ever said it. It's conversational. All right, now the next step. We continue. We got to anticipate their possible answers and your next questions. We're continuing down the path here. So again, take some time, but it's well worth it because it prepares you to deal with whatever might be thrown at you. And that is taking the questions you just developed, anticipating their possible responses, and then developing your next response, and then rinse and repeat, continuing that process. Now, as you might imagine, this could get rather involved. It could spread out pretty wide over the whiteboard. It could look like a computer programmer's flowchart. So again, what you're going to do is anticipate the answers to the questions, create your next questions, and continue. And you might need to write small on your whiteboard. I like to do this on paper. You might need several sheets of paper. Do take the time, though. Put the time and the thought into it. All right, so fast forward. So you now created lots of questions and responses. And the final step is going to be for you to study these and ideally role play them with a partner so that you're going to be smooth when you hear them. All right, so to review, you're going to write out the common objection, possible reasons, doubt creating questions, and then anticipate answers and the next questions. When you do this exercise, helps you prepare for and address objections in that non-adversarial way and ask questions to really get to the root of the problem and to then plant seeds of doubt in their mind, getting them to open up to your ideas, softening their resistance, and then hopefully seeing your point of view. So how are we going to do all that? Well, here is the process itself. Okay, all that was the preparation. Here is where we plug it in real time. So I'm going to give you the simple process for using those doubt-creating questions, and I'll share a number of how-to tips and phrases that you can use when you're dealing with resistance and objections in a variety of different situations. Okay, so the first step after hearing an objection is to use a softening statement. I mean, you don't want to give the impression that you're going to argue with them when they give you an objection. So it's good to let them know that you're going to be conversational with them. For example, after hearing an objection, you could say, "I see." "Oh, I understand." "Hey, not a problem." "Oh, well, let's talk about that." "Oh, let's discuss that." And notice my tone here. That's the kind of tone you want to use. "Oh, that's an interesting point. Let me get a good understanding of it." "Tell me more about that." "I'm pretty sure I can answer that. Let's go through some of the reasons behind it." "Or let's address that question." "Okay, yeah, I can see that." So now think about what this does emotionally with the other person. It's really easing any tension that might be there. Puts them in a frame of mind where they're more open to being a rational human being and having a conversation. I mean, this is so simple, a fourth grader could do it. I know as a fact because one did with me. Some of you may have heard this story before, but it was so impactful. I was attending a fundraising dinner as part of a celebrity golf tournament for Arizona Youth Baseball here, and I got to meet a few Hall of Fame baseball players. That was pretty cool. And during the dinner, kids were working the crowd. These were kids who were in the Little League selling raffle tickets, and I already had purchased five $20 tickets at the door for an autographed Ted Williams baseball jersey. Really would have liked to have won that. And this fourth grader, as I later found out, approached our table and very confidently asked, "Oh, hi guys, would you like to buy some raffle tickets?" And I smiled and I told her I already bought mine. And I was pretty impressed. These kids were approaching adults and asking for money. Although, if you think about it, that's what they do all the time, right, parents? But I tried to be as gentle as possible when I said no. And I said, "Oh, no, thanks. I already bought mine." And she looked at me with these big, blue, beautiful eyes, and she smiled. And in this almost hurt tone of voice, she replied, "That's okay." Well, I didn't know what to say. I mean, she totally disarmed me. I said, "All right." She goes, "No, that's okay." And then I'm still smiling, going, "Okay." And then she said, "You just didn't get any from me yet." Of course, I had nothing. That was brilliant. Of course, I had to buy more. I mean, that was a great example of someone not being deterred by an initial no, and then, of course, softening and then asking again. So she went through the entire process, actually. I mean, I had no good reason for not buying another one, right? It was a fundraising event. Okay, so what we're doing next then is we're isolating the real reason behind the objection. So we want to narrow their reason for objecting down to one issue, the real one. So after the softening statements that we just went through, you could use any of these. Okay, well, let's take that out of the picture. If we did, would we be the ones that you choose? Okay. Well, let's look at this in a different way. So, looking at us compared to the others, what would you say would be the more comprehensive choice for you? All right, well, if you didn't use that as one of your criteria, would we be the ones that you choose? If we completely took that out of the discussion, then where would we be? Can we narrow your reason for not choosing us to that one issue? Other than that, anything else that's holding you back? So if I understand what you're saying, if it weren't for this, you'd move forward. Is that right? Let's be sure we're talking about the same issue here. You get our program, it's just that's holding you back. Is that right? So the next step is where you actually use the doubt-creating questions that we just covered. I mean, I wish I had a magic phrase or line or secret sauce that you could use, and objections would just vaporize. As much as some people out there look for the easy button and they're always asking me for it, it doesn't exist. So again, you'll ask your questions here, designed to get them thinking about and doubting their reasons for objecting. Ultimately, you want them thinking, well, yeah, maybe there is another way to look at it. All right, now next, This is pretty powerful. It's the concept of a micro commitment. And I really haven't shared this in this form before. So what we've done is we've softened and broken down their resistance. Now we want to do one more thing before we go into, or you go into, restating your case as to why they should move forward. And it's simply asking them, are you open to an idea? Boom. This is almost hypnotic. This is the one that should require a permit. I mean, it's such an easy question for them to answer. Notice the key words in red here. Open. Again, given the context of where you are, most reasonable people would at least be open, right? And most people want to consider themselves to be reasonable. And you're asking about an idea. Are ideas threatening? No, they don't cost money. And once they say yes, that's the micro commitment. They're now invested in listening to what you have. All right. So now the next step is to make your recommendation again and then ask for commitment. So for example, all right, Mike, based on the math that we just did here, it looks like your total cost of ownership is going to be less with our system since you feel it's going to give you a greater return over the longer life of the unit. You're not going to have that out-of-pocket maintenance expenses. So given all that, what do you say we go ahead and move forward with it? Now, again, what's important here is if you made that statement before going through the doubt creation process, technically, you could be totally logically right, factually right, but they might not be there yet emotionally. Therefore, they wouldn't buy into the argument. They'd still be in resistance mode. All right. So now I'm going to give you a number of tips that you can use with this process. So the first is give some choices. One of the themes of this entire program is that the only way, of course, to professionally answer objections is to get the other person talking about the reasons. Now, another effective way is to offer them choices of reasons and listen to how they respond. So, for example, if the prospect said, we're happy with our present supplier. Oh, I see. Is it that you're locked into a contract or you've not yet found a better value? Or is it the quality you're getting there or the service that you like best? Let's say if a prospect said, we're not ready to do anything yet. Oh, is it because there's something that needs to happen before you buy or that you just don't see enough value in acting right away? Prospect said, we can get it cheaper elsewhere. Oh, is price your main concern or are you looking at service factors also? So giving them choices allows them an easy way to voice their concerns. Even if they don't pick one of your alternatives, they'll likely answer with something of substance that you can deal with. All right. So some sales training suggests that you respond with the word why when you hear some resistance. Now, this can be a touchy situation because when you use why, depending on how you use it, the context, your tone of voice, it could come across as threatening. I'm not saying never use it. Matter of fact, I use it all the time with this kind of tone of voice. Oh, well, why is that? However, if somebody just said, oh, why? It could apply they're wrong, right? And then it can force them to justify their reasoning. So what we should do in the sales process when we're looking for the reasons behind their opinions and their actions is to use something non-threatening, something conversational, avoiding the word why. So if a prospect said, I don't think your system could work for us, instead of why not, you might say, oh, I see. What were some of the factors that you considered in reaching that conclusion? Or, what led to that decision? Here's another one. Prospect says, we can't do anything about new machines until next year. You could say, what is it about next year? It's going to make that a better time for you. So think of excuses and resistance that you commonly encounter, and then brainstorm for non-threatening questions that will help unlock those real reasons behind the words. And try to focus on the decision and the activity here and not the person. Okay, so let's talk about early resistance on your calls. And these are not real objections, but nevertheless, they cause calls to end quickly. It's that early resistance you get most times on a prospecting call. I mean, even if you do everything right that I teach in my smart calling process, everything point by point perfectly, hey, we're still going to get people who respond with some variation of, I'm not interested, or we're happy with what we're doing now. And this is one of the questions that I had received from Chris. So here's what we need to do. Expect it, but don't be deterred by it. Prepare for it. That's what we're going to do right now. So resistance after hearing an opening statement from an unknown caller, it's a natural conditioned reaction for many people. It's an instinct, and it usually works to blow sales reps off the phone, except you, of course, because you're going to have some conversational ways to get that prospect talking, which really is the key to keeping the call alive and creating an opportunity. And for a long time, I've had a name for these kinds of reactions that sales calls elicit from prospects: resistant reflex responses, triple R's. They're simply a natural reflex for people. It's like if there was an object flying at your head, what are you going to do? You're going to duck, right? That's instinctive. Not much thought goes into it. It just happens. And same thing is true at the beginning of sales calls for a lot of people. Now, if you try to counter these with logic, well, that's tough because, I mean, really, what are we being logical about? What are we arguing against? We haven't heard anything of substance yet other than their response. Oh, and you don't want to use that goofy line that some sales books should suggest. Well, of course, you're not interested yet. I haven't given you anything to be interested in. God, give me a break. All right, so what should you do? Get them talking, which moves their mind away from their reflex response and onto something of substance. So we do that by softening them first. Okay, so we already used our softening statements. Then we're going to use a pattern interrupt. So I'll explain this here. So a model of communication called neuro-linguistic programming that was popularized by many self-help gurus over the past 20 years, most notably Tony Robbins, talks about a theory and a technique called a pattern interrupt. Without causing your eyes to glaze over here, let me simplify it for our purposes. When people do or say something automatically, it's called a pattern. And if you do something that stops that pattern and gets someone talking or thinking about something else, that's a pattern interrupt. Oh, in what city were you born? That last question was a pattern interrupt. So you're listening along. You're thinking about what I'm talking about. And then I interrupted you with a question that probably caused you to think about the answer or wonder if I've gone off the deep end. Either way, using a pattern interrupt when you hear a resistant reflex response causes someone to answer a question, because that's what people do when we ask questions. So for example, if a prospect, after your opening, says, I'm not interested, sales rep says, oh, I see. So where are you now getting your compressors? Here's another one. Prospect simply replies with, we're all set. So what do you say then? Oh, well, I understand. When's your next project coming up? Prospect says, we wouldn't need that. Oh, well, how are you now handling written off receivables? No, this is not difficult to execute. Right? You simply need to anticipate the triple R's that you're likely to hear, or if you've been placing calls for more than a day, you already know which ones you hear. Then you prepare your responses. Now, your tone plays an important role in determining the success of what you're going to hear next. Use a soft, almost surprised, maybe even disappointed tone of voice. By no means do you want to seem confrontational. We want them to open up, drop that shield, and not feel threatened. Now, you might think that you might hear something like, look, what part of I'm not interested don't you get? And you might be right on occasion. This is not going to work every time. Nothing does. However, in many cases, you're going to be able to salvage some opportunities, at least get somebody talking where you might not have otherwise. And you're probably going to get some possible sales that you can cash in on either now or in the future. So your return on your tiny time investment is huge, and you've got nothing to lose here, right? Okay. Now, we're going to cover the Zuck question. This is one of the greatest questions I've ever heard when getting early resistance. And it wasn't on a sales call. It was actually on a, and it really wasn't even an objection, but we can adapt it. So let me explain. It was on a television interview done with Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg. That's why I called it the Zuck question. And I originally heard it when I was listening on a business radio show. So I tracked down the actual interview. So I went and researched it. And the interviewer was Lori, I guess you pronounce it, Siegel with CNN. So I'm going to actually play, hopefully this works here.
So you are not stepping down as chairman.
That's not the plan.
That's not the plan. Would anything change that?
I mean, like eventually over time, I mean, I'm not gonna be doing this forever, but I'm not currently thinking that makes sense.
Okay, so what happened there? To review, in the middle of the interview, after discussing some of Facebook's recent troubles, the interviewer slipped in, "So you're not stepping down as chairman?" And Zuckerberg replied, "That's not the plan." And then here it is, if you didn't hear it, she said, "Would anything change that?" Wow, brilliant. So what did he do? I mean, he melted, right? He got uncomfortable. He got nervous. He smiled and he said, "Well, eventually over time, I'm not going to be doing this forever." So simple, but yet so effective. So that question or a version of it gets people thinking in terms of possibilities. And you can use variations of it as well. For example, what would change that? Or what would have to happen in order to change that? So again, think of situations of the resistance that you encounter and formulate a similar question that would be appropriate for you to use to get them to open up. All right. So we had a question about covering a price resistance. Now, notice I didn't say real price objections. If you want to deal with real price objections, you follow the exact same process that we already covered using the doubt-creating questions. And as a little tip, you can blow away price objections in advance by attaching numbers to the problem or pain that they're experiencing, and then also their potential payoff with a solution before you ever give your price. Now, let's talk about price resistance and price comments. These are something different. They're often interpreted by sales reps as signs that the person's not going to buy and they cave in and they drop their price, basically giving away pure profit. So I went into a local Chinese restaurant here at lunchtime and wanted to get a takeout order from the lunch menu. And I asked the person for soup since it wasn't included on the takeout menu. So the woman at the counter told me that they did not have soup to go with the lunch specials, just for dining in. And of course, you can insert your own no soup for you joke there, right? So I really wanted some hot and sour soup. So I said, "How can I get soup?" She pointed to the main menu and said, all they had was the big container for two people for $6. And I said, "Well, how about filling it halfway? And just make it for one and just charging me half price." And she smiled and said, "The soup is for two and it's $6. So of course I bought it. Now, that was an example of price resistance. I didn't say I wasn't going to buy, right? Here's another one. I was waiting out a long flight delay, and I got into one of the few empty seats at the airport snack bar. And it happened to be right by the cash register, within earshot of most of the transactions. And I couldn't help but take notice of one. A customer plopped a large bottle of water on the counter. And the counter person said, "That'll be $4.89. $4.89? Holy moly, that's more than liquor. That's crazy." Well, the person at the cash register empathized and said, "Yeah, that's pretty outrageous. Hey, you can get a smaller one for $2.50. The guy said, "Well, that's more like it." And the sale was just cut by about 50%, right? So my delay was so long that a new shift came in, and I saw a similar transaction with the new worker. This one's a little bit different. Customer walked up, same size bottle of water. Might have been the same bottle, actually. "That'll be $4.89. $4.89? My God, that's robbery. And the clerk stared at him, motionless, and leaned forward slightly and paused and said, "Well, cheapest you're going to find in the airport." Customer handed over a crisp $5 bill and end of story, full price sale. Now, the first counter person committed the same mistake that many businesses and sales reps also are guilty of, and that's caving in to a simple price statement. The first thirsty customer was still going to buy the water until the counter guy talked him out of it. Notice the customer didn't say, "I'm never going to ever buy water here because your prices are too high." He simply grumbled about the price. Just like we might complain about when we're in a traffic jam, we still got to drive in it. We're just not happy about it. Then we get over it. The point here is that there's a difference between price comments and statements and real price objections. So again, how do we handle the real price objection? We do exactly what we did before. Okay, we go through our process. We go through our doubt creation process. I mean, if we react to a simple price comment, let's turn this around. If after you give your price and a prospect says, "Wow, that's a great price. I expected it to be more," you probably wouldn't say, "Oh, you do? Well, let me see what I can do. I think I'll raise it by 30% then." Right? So when we hear a price comment, what should we do? How about this? Just pause, say nothing, see if they continue. Actually, this is a good tactic anytime you hear a price statement, even if you think it's a real objection. Then what you want to do is have your own statement, which is not an excuse, ready to go. Okay? And again, if you've been on the phone more than a couple days, you've already heard most of the price statements you're ever going to hear. So prepare your responses. And I'm not talking about, again, rebuttals. Those are crazy. I'm talking about something innocuous, something simple in response to the price comment. For example, "Wow, your delivery charges are higher than ABC Company." Sales rep might say, "Well, yeah, we've got an extensive tracking and quality control process." $500 for the yearly maintenance contract. Yeah, that covers any service or support calls that you're going to have all year long. Now, then it's important, move on with the conversation. Okay, don't dwell on their comment. Let it die. Let me reiterate, giving in to price statements takes money out of your pocket and your company's profits. Okay. So we also had a question about the "I want to think about it." I remember when I was a hotshot corporate sales rep just out of college, my first corporate job with the old AT&T, one of my first sales managers gave me a piece of advice that I've never forgotten and always believed. And he said, "Nothing's going to kill a deal like time." I mean, how true. With prospects and customers, I mean, if they're interested today and if they have a pressing need or a problem, if it's not handled by you today, or if they don't take action on it, maybe it's going to get to the bottom of the pile, bottom of the to-do list, until it vaporizes into thin air. I mean, the new set of concerns will take over. So to be successful, it's our job to keep the flames of interest hot. So to avoid letting time steal your sale, consider the things that you hear, such as, well, let me think about it. I need more time. Or, yeah, maybe we can get around to this later. Well, what should we do here? Well, first, let's try to understand why someone says these things. Why do they delay? Why do they stall? Well, maybe give them the benefit of the doubt. Maybe they are sincere. Maybe they truly need some more time before they make a decision. Okay, fine. Find out what specifically is going to happen and why the time is required. If they have no intention of ever buying from you, or worse, never making a decision of any type, we want to find that out too. And if the matter is simply one of procrastination and you both agree a decision would be in their best interest, it's best that we help them take that action now, since their perception of urgency is likely going to diminish, right? So what you don't want to do upon hearing their stall, though, is confront them with, again, the slick phrase designed to push them into a decision. I mean, that's just going to annoy them and maybe even cause them to come up with more rational reasons for delaying. So like the exercise we did earlier, the best approach is to use a question, surprise, right? To get them talking, to help them turn their interest into action. So first, we got to uncover the cause of the delay. So if your interpretation of the situation here tells you they are sincere and there is something that truly needs to happen before they buy, fine. Just be sure that they're leaning towards you and help them be specific about the next action. For example, so what you're saying is that my proposal is what you want to go with. All you need at this point is to write up the justification so you can present it to the acquisitions manager and get the funds. Is that right? Okay, so well, how about if we deal with the other situation, the ones that cause you grief and waste our time and money, the ones that cause us to pull our hair out, the ones where they're either flat out procrastinating or just yanking your chain. So here's questions to help them open up and give you real issues that you can deal with or that will cause them to confess and admit that they're not going to buy from you. And by the way, that's a success, right? Oh, well, what concerns do you still have? What's causing you to hesitate? What questions are still unanswered for you? What are you still unsure of? What is it that you're planning to consider? Or you could provide choices that might help them give you a real reason for the delay. Is it the, then of course fill in the blank, that's holding you back? Now, some people might argue, hey, this just gives them an easy excuse to pick, one that isn't true. Could be. But like most attempts at deception, we uncover it with more questioning. Now, if you finally conclude that the person isn't worth any more short-term effort on your part, hey, let them know you'll be happy to work with them when or if they do make that decision. And then move on. And for the ones that are simple procrastinators, hey, keep trying to stoke the fire until it reaches a point where they do act. Continue questioning to make them even more uncomfortable about their need or their problem. And I mean, through questions, you can help them feel and even speak how much better their life would be with your product or service. So don't let me think about it or any other similar delay take money out of your pocket. Move them forward or move them out. You can tweet that one, okay? All right, so let's talk about planting a seed for the future. Hey, if you ultimately determine someone isn't worth pursuing in the short term, when you've both concluded that you're not going to be doing business today, but you want to keep the door open, you need to say more than, oh, well, okay, well, keep us in mind, okay? Naturally, everyone would respond to that with, oh, yeah, okay. And they forget about you before they hang up the phone. So instead, create a picture for them to remember you. Create a mental movie or a mental box in which they can place you. For example, all right, Pat, so tell you what, the next time you find yourself in an emergency without replacement parts when you need them, give us a call. Because as we discussed, we stock over 30,000 parts. We're pretty likely to find what you need within minutes and get it to you. Or, all right, well, hey, keep in mind that we're the company that's known for having a pool of licensed tradespeople on call for temporary jobs. So The next time you find yourself with more work than you can handle, give us a call. Sales reps waste a lot of time following up with people who stall and have little intention or even ability to buy. And another time and money waster is letting those same types of prospects drag you out far too long. So follow these ideas and you'll find yourself closing more sales more quickly and spending less time with the people who never are going to buy from you. All right, so let's talk about bringing up an objection before they do. So I was listening to some sales reps' calls in preparation for a client training program, like I always do. I like to review the recorded calls. And I heard him say, and right now you might be thinking that since you're in a contract with a supplier, that's going to hold you back. Now, here's how others have handled that. And then he proceeded to masterfully remove that possible but yet unspoken objection. So here's the key point. If there's an issue that always comes up as an objection, it's not a bad idea to bring it up and answer it before it becomes a major issue later. I mean, by bringing up the objection before they do, you clear up negative thinking early in the call. For example, the prospect might feel that your price is too high and therefore is not going to be listening very carefully to what you're saying. But by addressing the situation early and resolving the issue, the prospect's going to be more open to your presentation. So here are some ways to transition into bringing up the inevitable objection. So you might be wondering, I bet you're asking yourself, if you're concerned about, and I'll tell you what's interesting, as I was preparing this, I actually pulled this out of something that I had written years ago to share with you. And I see a Facebook ad today from another sales trainer, actually kind of a big name. And he actually used these same words. And I'm thinking, oh, okay, my stuff must be popular out there. All right, I digress. Okay, here's another technique. And it's a little unconventional, but it's confusing them. If a prospect's giving you a brush off and you're getting ready to end the call, you might want to throw out a phrase that confuses them and also makes them curious at the same time. For example, here's the hypothetical. A caller says this at the end of a call. So one thing to keep in mind for the future is a double co-op tie-in that will help you build some store traffic. Now, like you, the prospect might be thinking, a what? So this technique helps prospects forget about their reasons for not wanting to continue the conversation. And now they're thinking, what is this? They're curious. So then after their curiosity, the caller might say, oh, well, it's a promotion that two of your suppliers use to fund in conjunction with a regular sale that you'd be holding anyway. So let's talk about what you have coming up, see if you could use it. All right, a few other points here. Let's think about how you would react to this statement. Well, you know, on the one hand, we like your program, but yeah, the lack of reporting feature is going to stop us from working with you. Now, many sales reps would jump in and attack the objection, but of course you wouldn't because of everything we discussed here, right? We would take another path. And what I would suggest in this case is let's focus on what the prospect or customer likes. So you might say, oh, well, let's talk about that. So let's first go through what you've identified as the reasons for wanting our program. And that one just makes sense, right? Because right at the beginning of that objection, they said, on the one hand, we really like your program. So this involves really listening very carefully. Okay, so let's talk about not creating or inviting rejection, or excuse me, objections. So a sales rep appeared to have a sale in the bag, and the prospect was given some buying signals and was very enthusiastic about the offer. And then the prospect spoke in terms of how we would use the service and how we could find the funds for it. And then the sales rep continued with, oh, and another feature that I think is just great is, And then he proceeded to go into a presentation on a component that the sales rep had not even asked about. And it wasn't even one the prospect had mentioned. And then the prospect listened with indifference. Then the tone of the conversation changed. And the prospect said, yeah, you know, I'm just wondering, we really have no need for that last component. So why don't you take it out and see if you could reduce the price for me? So the prospect had gone from paying full price to actually not buying in that case because of a price objection. And it was an objection that the sales rep had created. So really the very simple and obvious but not always followed lesson here is talk when appropriate. Yeah, I mean, if you talk too much, if you apologize, if you bring up facts that are not important to the listener, I mean, or even just generally sticking your foot in your mouth, you're going to create objections which were not present until you manufactured them. So am I suggesting you hide information that's important? No, that would be unethical. I'm recommending that when making a recommendation, you only talk about what the other person's interested in. Okay, so we're winding down here, and I'm going to give you a bunch of rapid fire tips. Before writing off a prospect who you're obviously getting nowhere with, ask them, would you say we'll likely never do business together? Now, this might prompt them to say, well, never's a long time, and that gives you a lead-in for more questions. Next, take each of your top five competitors. Determine your main advantages over them. Then develop questions to get prospects talking about their needs in those areas. For example, how are you now affected by the order fill rate that you're getting? To get someone talking after someone states an objection, you can use this question. Oh, tell me more about that. To help an indecisive prospect move forward, you can ask them, what would happen if you did nothing? Now, here's the thing. If they say, well, we'll probably be in the same place we are right now, something else you can add to that is, well, actually, you'd be worse off because you lost an entire year. And again, if you tie that into what would happen if you do nothing, where are you going to be a year from now? All right, next, use the just suppose technique. Hey, just suppose the money was in the budget. Would you go with it then? Question to ask when they're comparing you to a discounter. You can say something like, well, what other expenses have you considered in the long term if you went with a lower priced alternative? If a prospect says your price savings wouldn't be large enough to switch, ask him, well, how much would you have to increase sales by to generate the same net profit as the savings that we provide you for a year? And be prepared to be able to do the math here, okay? In response to a sin literature, sin something brush off, try, well, you know what? I'll be happy to. So let's fast forward. Let's say you like what you see. What's going to happen next? Or would you be ready to move forward at that point? Let's see. If budget's a problem, ask them, what have you done in other situations where there was something you really wanted, something that could help your department, but it wasn't budgeted? How did you get it? If you hear, I'm going to shop around, ask them, oh, okay, what are you going to be looking for? This might help clear up any misunderstandings about maybe what you have, and maybe cause them to forego the shopping and buy from you now. They tell you to call back in a few months or so. We all heard that, right? You can respond with, hey, I'll be happy to. Let me ask you, what's going to make that a better time for you? Okay. Questions and objections should never leave you at a loss for words. Every time you hear a new one, brainstorm three or four ways that you're going to respond next time. Write them down in a notebook, study them, open up a doc file, and constantly study it, add to it until they're committed to memory. Okay, we covered a lot of stuff today. I want to thank you for investing your valuable sales time with me. We covered tons of ideas for addressing resistance and objections conversationally. And if you adapt them, practice them, most importantly, use them, I'm confident that you're going to get more of the sales that you might not be getting right now. All right, here is to your sales success. I'm Art Subcheck.